We had a great vacation. It was just wonderful. I got a chance to test drive a Subaru Outback. That was actually a cool God story. See, we always rent cars when we go on long trips. Both of our cars are older and they're getting up there in miles. My car especially is getting up there in miles. And since it is, I'm hoping it'll last another year, maybe two more years. But I know that car shopping will be in my future. And so since we rent cars for long trips, and I've always been interested in Subarus, I thought it would be nice if we could rent one of the Subaru SUVs and kind of take it on this on an extended test drive years before I'm ready to start car shopping. So I made a reservation online for the class of car that would include the Subaru SUVs. And I've heard good things about the Forester, but I was most interested in looking at the Outback. And so I called Budget weeks ahead of time, called him, because every time the call was going to the call center and not to the Budget at the airport. And so I finally got in touch with someone there, and I said, hey, we're going to be renting a car this Saturday, and was wondering if you could, sometime Saturday, if a Subaru SUV comes through, if you could just kind of set it aside for us. And she said, I can't do that this far ahead. She said, but if you call that day, then you can do that. And they did have, they had SUVs in their fleet, or Subaru SUVs in their fleet, so that was good. She said, what day are you coming? I said, Saturday. She said, oh, we'll have plenty of cars that night. Everybody's returning cars on Saturday. So I was like, okay, great. So then Saturday, she said, but if you call that day, they should be able to set one aside for you. So Saturday morning, I was calling, and it kept going to the call center. And then Saturday afternoon, calling, kept going to the call center over and over and over again. And so then it was time to go to the Night of Destruction with the church group. We had a great time. That was a lot of fun. And at that point, I just said a little prayer. I was like, God, I've done all I can. I rented the proper class. I tried to call ahead. I tried to call today like they told me to do, and it's totally out of my hands. So you know that I'm interested in trying this out. Any car we get will be fine, so I'm fine with whatever you choose to do. But it's out of my hands. I can't do anything more. It's going to be up to you. So we went to the Night of Destruction, had a great time. 10:30-ish, 10:45, we went over to Budget to pick up our car last Saturday night. And we got there, and the person I talked to said they would have plenty of cars. When I got there, there were only three SUVs in that class on their lot. There was a Ford Escape and a Subaru Forester and a Subaru Outback. Is that amazing? Is that just, I mean, just the little things are so cool. So I took the Outback, and I followed that up with just a thank you, God. Just a real simple, just knowing that he was there and part of that. So that was just the beginning. That was just the beginning of our trip. We had a safe drive down. We went down to North Carolina to my family's house Sunday night. And then Monday morning, we took off. My dad had to work, so they were going to come down Monday night. And so we went on down to Pawleys Island, which was about 45 minutes south of Myrtle. And the house was just gorgeous. It was beautiful. I would spend time showing pictures just because it was such a neat thing. And it was perfect for us because not only beautiful, but upstairs had two bedrooms with king-size beds and bathrooms attached. That's really nice when you have eight people in the same house. And then downstairs had two bedrooms with two twin beds, which were perfect for my sister and her daughter and my two sons. And they each had a bathroom to themselves. So that was really nice. And we found out later in the week that that you could take four hot showers all at the same time. And that was perfect. That helped. That came in handy a lot. So we got all settled in, and we were going to go out and grab a little bite to eat ourselves. So we decided to kind of play it safe. We saw a Texas Roadhouse while we're driving around. We're like, oh, we all like Texas Roadhouse. So we went into Texas Roadhouse, and the server we had was just great. She was just really, really good. And I always ask, because I'm very particular about my steak, and I'm frustrated that people that work at a steak restaurant don't know how to cook a steak a lot of times. So I always ask the server, how's the cook tonight? Is he on point? Is he accurate with his temperatures? And she said, he is the best chef or the best cook we have on the grill tonight. And I said, great. So I ordered steak, my son ordered steak, and it came out, and the steak was perfect. Just a perfect medium rare. It was a sirloin, but it kind of had that filet feel. It was just nice and soft, perfect. And I found out later that it was really neat how this all worked out, because the waitress, her roommate was the cook. So she went back to him and said, hey, I bragged about you. You better do a good job. So I think we got a little extra TLC put into our steaks based on their relationship that they had together. So that was really, really cool. So then my parents, they were going to come down after my dad got off work. And so they got all packed up, and I found out they were leaving at 10. It's like a four-hour trip from their house to the beach. So I was like, I'm a night owl anyways. You guys know that. And I was like, 2 a.m. is not too bad. Not for me. And so I was like, I'll stay up for them. They needed to get in somehow anyway. There was no key for them to get in. And so I waited up, and I checked. We had 360, a little app where we could watch them, you know, moving. And after I checked about 1:30, and I was like, surely they're real close by now. And they weren't close at all. I don't know what happened in the first 2 hours, or what should have been the first 2 hours of their trip. They took like 3.5 hours, and they'd only traveled what they should have traveled, like an hour and a half. So it was 4:30 when they finally got there, and I'm just, you know, and getting them in and getting them settled and moving luggage around. And of course, you know, they're there and they've been driving, and so there's a little bit of visiting time that happens there. So it's about 5:45-ish. And I was going to head on up and go to bed. And so I went upstairs, and when I went up to our bedroom, there was a little bit of light coming in above our blinds. And I was like, I don't know if I've ever watched the sunrise on the ocean. So I leaned over, and I woke Jess up just a little bit so she wouldn't panic. And I said, hey, my family's in safe. They're fine. They're in bed. But I want to go down and watch the sunrise on the ocean. And so I went down there by myself and sat up on the walkway that goes over the dunes. And I sat there from 6 to 6:45 and just watched the sunrise. And I got a video. I got pictures. It was just gorgeous. And when the sun got up over the horizon and it just started reflecting over all the ocean and across the, it was just a wonderful, wonderful little moment. So then I went back and I went to bed. So I went to bed. And so then I woke up. And I had done some research. Some of you guys are thinking, is he going to tell us about his whole trip? Yes, I am, actually. I am. And there's a reason. There's a reason. This actually has purpose. So you guys can just enjoy a big old long story, and then it has a definite connection a little bit later. So and in awful detail, too, because that's the way I do things. So because details are important to me. So Tuesday, I wake up and I call the deep sea fishing company. We were going to go deep sea fishing on Thursday. Weeks ago, I did my homework. That's what I do. And I had found the company that I was going to go with. On their website, they said they had afternoon trips. From what the story you heard before, obviously I'm not a morning person. I come from a family that aren't morning people. So the morning trips weren't going to work for us. But I found a company that had afternoon trips. On their website, they had every day. 3:30 trips, or 3 o'clock, comes back at 8 o'clock. And so I was like, perfect. So I called them the week before just to verify. And they said, well, we have trips on Monday and Thursday. And I was like, oh, good. Then Thursday it will be, but let me check weather. How much, you know, time in advance do you need? She said, just give us a couple days. We're not booking the trips out right now anyway. So I was like, good news. So Tuesday, 2 days before, I call them. Find out that I had misinformation. There was no Thursday afternoon trip. So then I'm back to the drawing board, and I start research, and I found another company that I didn't find in all my research before, so I don't know how I missed them. And maybe I'd ruled them out because they were further north. They were up in Calabash, North Carolina, so a good hour and 15-minute drive from where we were. And so they had a sunset trip. So it was a little bit later, and we were coming back at 8:30 while the sun was setting. And I thought, that would be cool. It was a smaller boat, which made me a little more concerned. And we'll get there, because that was Tuesday. A couple little things on Wednesday, and then we'll get you to the Thursday trip there. So Wednesday, we had a beautiful day at the beach. Then we got a chance. We were going to clean up and go out to an early dinner. And this is a cool little story that happened here. My dad works in retail. The week before we left, a customer just happened to come in. And they got to talking about my dad's beach trip that coming up. And this guy actually had a second home in Pawleys Island. So he gave my dad a list of places to eat. So we didn't even have to go and start doing all the looking around. We had a list of the best places there in Pawleys Island to eat from. So there were a couple seafood, so we picked the seafood restaurant. Said, all right, that's where we're going. We didn't even have to do any shopping there. And it was wonderful. I had grilled grouper that was freshly caught that day, and it was delicious. And everyone in the family, they were just like, this was really good. And it didn't break the bank either. I mean, everything down there is expensive, but it wasn't what it probably could have been for the quality it was. And then from there, we went on to this little stone garden. And this was an interesting find. This was just in Pawleys Island. It's not something that's heavily, you know, advertised or anything. We drove by it a few times. They had two huge horse statues. And if you guys know my wife, she loves horses. And so she said, I wonder what's in that. What's in that? So I did some looking into it and found out that it was a really neat little find right there in Pawleys Island. People raved about it. And they had a ton of statues and plants and flowers. My mom and my wife, I knew they would really enjoy that. And they had a little zoo. We all love zoos. So we planned a trip for that after this meal. So we went out there and just had a great time. The zoo was really cool. There were a bazillion statues, and I can count on one hand the amount of statues that had clothes on. It was girl parts and boy parts as far as the eye could see, and my poor 11-year-old was traumatized. He was really uncomfortable with it, and my 13-year-old just got really quiet. So there's a little difference in the ages there, and so it was really a little bit uncomfortable. It was beautiful, but it was a little bit uncomfortable there. And so, needless to say, my kids are going to be a little step above in the anatomy, biology, sex education classes coming up in their education. But I try, as a teacher, you know, you try to make the best of every moment. As a parent, you know, we try to, you know, let's make this a teaching moment. So I tried to share with them the difference between art and pornography. And that did not make the situation any more comfortable at all. So Wednesday closed. So on to this deep sea fishing trip on Thursday. And there is a story connected with this trip that I'm only going to share next week. So you'll have one less, but it's a big story. It's really cool what happened. But the deep sea fishing trip was great. The boat was small, so I was concerned. Nobody got sick. The deckhand was great, Rich. He was just awesome. And the captain, just smooth as it could be. It did not feel like we were on an ocean. I've had rougher rides on a lake. It was amazing. Little 65-foot boat, not the big 100-foot boat. And what was cool was because it was a smaller boat, there were less people. There were only 25 people on our boat. And we had, so it was a lot of very personal connection between us and the two crew members that were there. And when we stopped to drop our first line in, the deckhand, Rich, came by and he had a Bluetooth speaker and he set it around the corner from me and I recognized it was Metallica. And so I always try to find connection points with people, always trying to find ways to connect with people. And so I like hard rock. I like rock and roll. I like all sorts of music. And so I commented on that. I said, I just got a chance to go see a Metallica tribute band a few weeks ago live. And it was really cool. And he said, oh, you like Metallica? So he went and grabbed his Bluetooth speaker and put it right behind me. And I was like, this is pretty all right. But that started some conversations between my whole family and this guy, Rich. Come to find out, this guy had just moved down from New York, a little less than a year ago, and started going to church there, and 6 months prior had just been baptized in the ocean. And so when he said, so you like Metallica, I said, yeah, I'm a preacher with diverse music tastes. And that's what kind of opened the door into that conversation. And so it really was, no one got sick. We caught a ton of fish. Only two of them were keepers, so it was, we had a great time of catch and release. It was a bunch of small little sea bass, but it was fun. We got a chance to bring them in and throw them back in and tell them to go get your mommy and tell them to come bite the hook. But no one got sick. The connection there, and strange enough, my sister has been divorced for a long time, and she's been very shy but somehow she ended up with Rich's number. So, they were talking, and they were both born in 77. So, you know what? Who knows what might come from the, we might have a free deep sea fishing trip waiting for us next time we go down. It was beautiful, and coming back was beautiful. And it was just, the whole day was just really, really, really good. And there's an extra story that makes that day even huge. So come back next week for that one. It fits next week's sermon. So we're on to Friday. Thursday night, I look at the weather, and Friday, we had good weather all the whole trip. And so Thursday night, the weather for Friday was going to be storms all day, not just rain, thunderstorms starting at 7 a.m. And so I was like, you know, we've had great days. We've got this nice house. The house had a pool table in it. So, you know, and we're all like, we just have a pool tournament all day long, and we'd be happy. We'd play Farkle or Uno or whatever. And so so I thought, all right, well, we had our last beach day. We had a great trip. This was fun. And so woke up Friday morning, and there was no rain. And so we checked, and the storms had been moved to 1 p.m. So we're like, oh, let's all get dressed. Let's go to the beach. So we all went to the beach, and it sprinkled a little bit about the one time, and then just completely blew over. No thunder, no storms, nothing. We got a whole nother day at the beach, and we came in, and we found another seafood place to have our last night, you know, out, and they had live entertainment. I am a sucker for live entertainment. I think there are some people in here that share that, and so they were an 80s cover band, so 80s pop, not hair band, 80s pop cover band, so I was like, I like some 80s music, about any kind of 80s music I like. So, and that felt like a safe music genre for kids. So we got there, and they had one table left kind of out in that area. There was like a gazebo, a very large gazebo where the band was playing, and they had seats in here and all that seating. But they had like four picnic tables out in this outdoor seating, like little lights above. It was really a neat setting, but they said, we can seat you here. And it was perfect because the band was right here, and we were kind of side stage to the band. So we're as close as you can get without being like in front of them on the dance floor. So they said, we can't guarantee you anything after if the rain comes, because there's a threat of rain. And I mean, there was a threat of rain from 7 a.m. Here we are at 8:30 p.m. and there's no rain except for the little sprinkle we had. And so we were like, you know what, we'll take the risk. So we sat down, and the server was great. Before our food came, we had a little sprinkle, and it made me a little nervous, but that passed. And the server was great. The food was pretty good. It was good. And the band was just great. PG entertainment. Not a single cuss word out of their mouth. The crowd wasn't crazy. It was just perfect. You don't find that very often in that type of setting. And we got a chance to sit outside the bar crowd, but still be part of all the music and all that. It was just, you couldn't have asked for a better last night there. And we're sitting there, and I'm eating my, what was it that night? Ginger and bourbon glazed salmon with lobster risotto. And yeah, it was good. And my sister and I are sitting there across the table from each other trying to guess the 80s song before they sung the first lyric. And that was a lot of fun. Just had a blast. Just had a great, 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 great time. And that does, all of that ties in to the message. This year we've been dedicating a series of sermons for each of our five core values, brand new core values. We're going to hit these again. God is first. This is our first core value. In all things, following him is the priority. Second core value, devoted to God, a full dependence on him, and a complete abandonment of self. So our first two core values are connected with our relationship with God, as growing in God. Our last three core values are connected with actively pursuing the mission of Christ. That's investing in people. So growing in God, investing in people. It's our mission statement. So our last three core values, core value number three, growing God's kingdom, increasing and developing devoted disciples of Jesus. And core value number four, actively investing, taking personal responsibility, doing whatever it takes to move the gospel forward. I started this series on the fourth core value, fourth core value, the week before I left for my vacation. We talked about the tale of two harvests, that there will be wheat and there will be chaff, and there will be the righteous and the condemned. One group will be harvested into the farmer's barn, and the other group will be burned with unquenchable fire. That is the reality we believe as truth, as people who trust God and believe that the Bible is there to give us this information so that we know what's at stake. And then we looked into what Jesus did, that Jesus gave us an example of how you actively invest into others. You go to where the people are, you teach them how to apply God's truth to their lives, you witness by proclaiming your experiences with God's kingdom, and you serve them. You serve a compassionate action that loves on a tangible level. And so this week we were talking about my vacation. I'm just kidding. This week we're talking about the first little part there in the fourth core value, taking personal responsibility. So let's go on and flip your notes on over there, and we'll take some notes in your bulletin. As we talk about taking personal responsibility, we're going to look at the one miracle that shows up in all four Gospels. The one miracle that Jesus does. I mean, the resurrection happens in all four Gospels, but there's only one other miracle, one miracle that Jesus performs that is in all four Gospels. Does anyone know what miracle that is? You're on it. Lou's got it. Yeah. Our sound guy had it back there. Feeding of the 5,000. It occurs in all four of the Gospels. And if you have your notes, yeah. She was like, it's right here. If I'd have just been a little more courageous. I got it. So the feeding of the 5,000. So if you flip your bulletin notes over, you'll be able to see that. So after hearing about John the Baptist being beheaded by Herod, Jesus wants to get away. He wants to go off to a solitary place. But the crowds, they followed them. They followed him and the disciples. And we're told that Jesus had compassion on them and he healed their sick. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place." Good job. His notes are up here, so he's going to have to connect there. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." So the disciples noticed that the people were in a place where they could not get food for themselves, and it was getting late. So let's write this down, because this is important to note. The disciples care enough to notice a need. They care enough to notice a need. And this is good. This is very good. They've been paying attention. This is connecting in with the compassion that Jesus was teaching them, to be able to look at people and see their needs, to see what they were thinking ahead. They were thinking, they were planning, they were saying, hey, we're out in the middle of nowhere, these people are going to need food, let's send them away so they can get some food. And they might have been thinking about Jesus as well. We're not told this in the scriptures, in any of the four Gospels, but we know that Jesus was getting away because the heartbreaking news of John the Baptist, and all these crowds followed him, so they might have been thinking about Jesus as well. Let's move these people on and give Jesus the space that he was looking for when we came out here. And so you'd think that Jesus would commend them for thinking about this and having compassion and thinking ahead, but he doesn't actually. His comment is a little bit of a curveball. It says, Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. What? You give them something to eat. You give them something to eat." Taking personal responsibility. You give them something to eat. Jesus communicates. Let's write this down. Jesus communicates. You take personal responsibility and get involved. You give them something to eat. Mark notes in his account of this story that before going off to get a loan, that there were so many people coming and going that they didn't get a chance to eat. They were hungry. They were tired. They were heartbroken. They might have been very discouraged over the beheading of John the Baptist. That was a crazy thing. And all of a sudden, here's this. And then with Jesus and his disciples and the apparent connection there, there was definitely a lot of emotional and physical stress going on with the disciples at this time. And Jesus says, you take responsibility of this. You take this on. Don't send them away. They don't need to go away. You give them something to eat. You feed them. You get involved. And the disciples reply. Their reply is logical. It's truthful. It's honest. They say, we have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And John gives us a little detail on this. In John's gospel, he says, here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. So like the size fish that we were catching and throwing back. Small fish. This was a little boy's bag lunch. As John is describing this, these aren't big old loaves of bread. These are small loaves of bread. Going back to Texas Roadhouse, they're like the little biscuits that you would have gotten, little rolls, little loaves, little fish. And they say, this is all we have. These are our resources. We're told in Scripture that Philip had already been asked, what would it take to feed all these people? And it would take a half a year's wages just for everyone to get a bite. Over 5,000 people there. And Jesus says, bring what you have to me. Let's read that. He says, bring them here to me. Oh, actually, didn't I miss one? So the disciples don't believe that they have the resources to fulfill. Sorry, we can go back to the note. I think I missed that one. Oh, no, we'll go forward then. There we go. The disciples don't believe that they have the resources to fulfill Jesus' commandment. Let's go ahead and write that down. They say, this is all we have. We just have this 5 small loaves of bread, 2 small fish that John adds those adjectives in there to describe. This was not a large amount of food by any means. So the disciples are like, we don't have enough resources to do what you've asked us to do. We just don't. This is all we have, and it's clearly not enough. But Jesus had a huge lesson in store for them, so he says, bring them here to me. So let's write this down. Jesus asked them to surrender what resources they have to him. Jesus asked them to surrender what resources they have to him. Bring them to me. Put them in my hands. And then we know that Jesus blessed it. And this right here is the whole reason I told you all of my vacation story. Because there's a story that happened before the story. See, weeks and weeks before, when I was looking at places to stay, I had found a few different places, and they were all very comparable in price. This house in Pawleys Island was beautiful, but it was a good distance from Myrtle Beach. I had a couple other places up near Myrtle Beach, and I was a little worried about being so far away from everything, and if that would take away from vacation time, or if the beaches weren't as good and whatever, and I didn't know where to go with it. And my wife kept asking me, Have you got one yet? Have you got one yet? We're going to lose them all if you don't pull the trigger on one of them yet. So I prayed about it. And I said, I want you to take the lead, God. I want to make sure that it's a good decision for all 8 of us. I want us to have a great time together. This was our first vacation to the beach, and I didn't think about that until we were all talking about it. This is our first vacation to the beach as 8 of us. So it was really cool. So I prayed about it, and I said, God, I give this vacation to you. And immediately, and sometimes when I'm praying, you don't feel the conversation back and forth. But there are sometimes when I feel an immediate back and forth where God engages me. And at this moment, I felt an immediate engagement. And he said, really? He was communicating to me, are you seriously doing this? Or is this just, are these just words? Do you realize what you're saying? Do you really mean it, that you're going to give this vacation to me? And that was sobering, and I paused for a moment, and I said, yes, I really mean this. I give this vacation to you. And immediately, Pauly's Island. It was like immediate. And I was like, and then I kind of doubted that it was God because I was like, that's where I was leaning anyway. So was this just a conversation with my subconscious? And it was just trying to get me to make a decision. So I was like, you know, well, I pulled the trigger anyway because I was like, okay, if it was God, then it was God. If it was my subconscious, then I'm going to make a decision anyway. So let's go with it. And so we did. And the weeks passed, and then we went on our vacation, and then I'm laying there in bed Friday night in our king-size bed in our nice house that we've had after experiencing the day that I did on Friday that was supposed to be a total thunderstorm all day. And I'm laying there in bed, and then it hits me. I gave this vacation to God, and then I didn't think anything more about it. I didn't do anything different. I didn't set aside some special thing that I was going to do. I didn't go into it thinking, okay, let's look for ministry opportunities. Let's look for how we can, you know, use this vacation for God. And I started feeling overwhelmed with guilt. And I told God, I said, I'm so sorry. You kept your end of the bargain, but I didn't keep my end of the bargain. And then God, and he engaged me again. And he quickly took me to the beginning of the week. He said, you remember the meal at Texas Roadhouse and the server and the cook you got? You didn't see that that was me? What about the beautiful sunrise that you got to see on Tuesday morning? And that was just you and me hanging out there and the beautiful picture I painted. What about the rock garden, the stone garden that you would have never found if you would have been up in Myrtle Beach, but you found it because you were in Pauly's Island? And the restaurant that you found out about in Pauly's Island because of a customer that just so happened to come and visit your dad the week before. What about the fishing trip that you thought was going to be the perfect fishing trip and I booked you a better one? What about Friday? I'm laying there in bed Friday night. He said, what about today? Thunderstorms at 7 a.m.? No, you were out on the beach all day. And you sat outside and enjoyed a bar band that offered PG entertainment. And I was like, wow. I was just in awe. And his communication to me wasn't that I was looking for anything special from you. He wanted to remind me of what happens when we release things and put them in his hands. That he's going to turn it up. He's going to elevate it. He's going to bless it. And what's crazy is this story about this prayer happened weeks and weeks and weeks ago. And then sometime in between there and here, I planned this series. And I had this message planned for the Sunday before I left. But then I had to rearrange some things because another sermon felt better for the first sermon in the series. So I moved this one to the Sunday after I got back from vacation about the feeding of the 5,000. And so I had no idea all this was going to happen. He did. I'm laying there in bed. And he's like, I even gave you a 2,000-mile test drive in a Subaru Outback. When you called and called and called and called budget, and you called me one time. And I showed up. Isn't that amazing? And I think we all could see those things in our lives, and we could all be reminded of those details of how God takes and elevates when we hand things over to him, when we give things to him, when we give him our resource, what we have, and he blesses it. He turns it up. Let's write these things down here. So Jesus takes what they surrendered to him. Jesus takes what they surrendered to him. Blesses it. It says in verse 19, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. So let's write this down. He returns the blessed resource back to the disciples. This is the pattern. This is what happens. Jesus takes what they surrendered to him. He blesses it. And then he gave it back to the disciples. And they all ate and they were satisfied. What Jesus did was he empowered them to do what he had asked them to do. And he empowered them to meet their needs. So let's write that down. The disciples used the blessed resource to fulfill Jesus' command. Jesus said, you give them something to eat. And they said, we don't have anything. This is all we have. When it was placed in Jesus' hands and he elevated it, he blessed it and handed it back to them, then they could do what he asked them to do. Now, sometimes we're going to be asked to do things and we're going to be like, I don't have what it takes. I don't have this or I don't have that or I don't have enough resources. Whether it's a material resource or a skill resource or an ability resource, a willingness or a I'm too shy type of thing. Whatever, if God calls and he commands and he says, I want you to do this, our first response typically is, let me see what I got. And really when we read stories like this, and I wanted to remind you that from my experience last week, this isn't just something that's 2,000 years old. This happens today. That God takes the resources we give him and he elevates them. So our first thought when God asks us to do something is not, this is all I have, but take what I have. I want to do what you want me to do. I need your blessing to do it. So when Jesus blesses it, he gives it back to them and allows them to fulfill what he had commanded them. And he allows them to meet the needs of the people. Meet the people's needs. There we go. Meet the people's needs. 5,000 men. No telling how many women and children were there. Even if it was one per man, then that would have been 1,500 people, 15,000 people. What do we need to surrender to him today? In that prayer and that conversation with God Friday night, that was just an awe moment for me. And it didn't just end with an awe moment. Just the type of person I am, God works with me on my level. And he always throws a challenge in there. And I really felt like that conversation ended with God, with him asking, what's next? What else are you going to surrender to me? To watch me turn it up, to watch me bless it. God gave me that experience, and he knew I wasn't going to keep my mouth shut. But I think our church needs to hear that right now in our time, in this moment, going through these core values and replanting and growing and seeing what God has and the humility that's been involved in this church for the past few years and the willingness to say, we want to do what you want us to do, God. I think it's a great time for a story to be reminded that God will take what resource we have, even if it's small, even if we think, and listen, church, even if we think it's insignificant, if we place it in his hands, he will bless it. But it takes taking personal responsibility. We can't just say, I don't have enough, or I'm not going to do it, or I've done my part, or it's been this, or it's been... No. Jesus still has a plan for us, still has a plan for us as individuals, still has a plan for us as a church. Amen? The only way to accomplish his plan is to take what resources we have, even if it seems like a little boy's bag lunch, and turn it to him, to place it in his hands, to surrender it to him. It's at that time he's going to bless it and allow us to do what he is calling us to do. As I guarantee, once we start getting more and more of the vision that God has been so kind in giving to us in small pieces, once we get more of the full vision, once we see more of that puzzle starting to take shape, we're going to have moments where we're going to go, this is too big for us. This is too much. We don't have enough. We don't have enough people. We don't have enough skill set. We don't have this or that. That's going to be our reaction because that's what we do as humans. Let me remind you that does not need to be our first reaction. Our first reaction needs to be, let's take what we have and give it to God so we can get going with his vision. Amen. taking personal responsibility, actively investing, taking personal responsibility, doing whatever it takes. That's next week's message, doing whatever it takes to move the gospel forward. Pray with me. Father, thank you so very much for this real example and illustration of what it looks like when we turn things over to you. Even something as superficial as a vacation. It really doesn't matter a whole lot in the grand scheme of your kingdom and my life or the church at all. But you took that and you turned it into a real life illustration that you still do what happened that day when Jesus fed over 5,000 people. Father, I pray for our church that we would look at the resources we have and the thought would not be it's so small or it's insignificant, but our thought would be, let's see what God can do with it. Father, help us to be obedient to you, that when you ask us to do whatever you need us to do as a church, that we'd be willing to say, okay, we're willing, how do we do it? We need your help. We need your blessing. Father, I think it's so awesome in the story that Jesus gave the bread back to the disciples so that they could fulfill what he had asked of them. Father, I pray that you would help us to increase our awareness of our responsibility, that it would be something that would tug at our hearts, and that we would all take a step up in our responsibility for your kingdom, for this church, for what you want of us as a family. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.